guy who thinks nothing of walking 10 miles before breakfast.
I don't think much of it myself.
Can you top that, Harry Hirschfield?
I'll try.
Can you, Senator Ford?
How do I know? I didn't even hear it.
And you, Joe Lurie Jr.?
Me neither.
These three jokies in this derby of horse laughs bring you another session of Can You Top This? And now for the man who'll tell a story of how to win cash and glory, Ward Wilson.
Thank you, Charlie Stark. Can You Top This is unrehearsed and spontaneous, and our top rule is keep them laughing. Anyone can send in a joke, and if your joke is told by the well-known actor and storyteller Peter Donald, you get $10. Each of the three wits try to top it with another joke on the same subject. Each time they fail to top you, you get $5 more.
And this is your host, Roger Bauer. Can You Top This is made possible by our fine sponsor. Won't you please listen to this?
Are you ready, fellas, for the first round?
Ready.
I guess so.
All right. Senator is a little dubious tonight. The first joke is sent in by Seymour Barron of New York City, and this is on the subject of treatment. Treatment. Sounds as though it might give you quite a bit of leeway on that subject, so we'll be a little tolerant. And, Peter, suppose you start the ball rolling.
Well, Dr. Cronkite was in his office one day, and he was working on a very, very important case. Hagen Haig, as a matter of fact. When all of a sudden the door opened and in walked a patient. So the doctor put on his glasses. He said, "Ah, good afternoon, my young friend." He says, "Sit down. Tell me what could I done for you?" So the patient says,
"Are you the doctor?"
He says, "Well, certainly you are speaking to Dr. S. Besser V. Cronkite. That's my name. Dr. Cronkite, M.D., money down." He says, "What seems to be your trouble there?"
He says, Doc, I want you to examine the back of my neck."
He says, "The back of your neck? Well, please turn around a little bit so I can see here." "Goodness sakes, that's serious, you know. Your neck has got a severe discoloration. It's got a laceration. It's got... Why don't you wash it once in a while?" "It's terrible. Honest boy." He says, "You got all big cuts and bumps and bruises here." He says, how did you get this? What happened? You got all these cuts and bruises."
He says, "Well, Doc, that's from playing the violin in an orchestra."
He says, "From playing the violin?" He says, "How could playing the violin in an orchestra give you such bumps on the back and the neck?"
He says, "Because I sit right in front of the slide trombone player."
The laugh meter registered 450 on that one, Ward.
I don't blame you for brushing that off like kicking at it. Gives our three wits plenty of room to get in here over or under Mr. Barron's 450. Let's see how many hands we have. Joe Lurie had his hand up first this time.
Well, I'm not sure. Yeah, I got it. He reminded me of one of that Irving Hoffman, the caricaturist and critic, told me. Fits in here for treatment. It's about this goof that goes to the doctor. He says, Hey, Doc, I'm feeling terrible. He says, "What's the matter with you?" He says, I got a cat inside of me. It's clawing me and everything." He says, "Cat inside of you?" So he examines him and he finds out it's an appendix. Says, "Well, I'll cure you." So he puts him under ether, and as he took his appendix out, he says, "I'll cure him with the cat, too." So he grabs a hold of the office cat, little black cat, and when the guy comes out of the ether, he says, "See? I cured you. There's the cat." He says, "Oh, no, you made a mistake. That ain't the cat. It's a gray cat that's doing it."
Well, looks like only 400 on the laugh meter now, Ward.
It doesn't top Mr. Barron's 450, so he's now up to $15, and Harry Hirschfield had his hand up.
Well, I got a couple in mind on treatment. I'm going to take the advantage of the leeway of a subject like that. You know, everybody that's coming from Europe, this is a little preface. Coming from Europe, they naturally all come into New York Harbor, and they're all talking of America. And there's a sailor listening to the whole thing there. He's been to New York and back 1,000 times. And as they were coming into New York Harbor, one said, "Oh, there's the Statue of Liberty. Oh, America, they treat you right. Statue of Liberty stands for wealth. That's what it means. We'll have everything here." So this guy says, "Don't kid yourself. The Statue of Liberty, everybody comes in New York Harbor, says that the Statue of Liberty is going to do something for it. In fact, the Statue of Liberty is very, very poor." He says, "What do you mean the Statue of Liberty is poor?" "See, she has only a jersey to her back." The gag I want to tell. Mrs. Zipkin was sick. So she went to a friend of hers and she says, "I got to have a doctor. Do you know a good doctor? Somebody that you can depend on?" She says, go to Dr. Popnikov. There is the doctor. Dr. Popnikov, if I recommend him, you can take him. So this woman went home, Mrs. Zipkin, but she wasn't exactly convinced. So she calls her up again and she said, are you sure that Dr. Popnikov is a good doctor? She said, a good doctor? Would I be going to him every day for 20 years if he wasn't a good doctor?
That sort of broke the ice, Harriet.
$1,000 on the Laffy.
Mr. Barron still holds his $15, and Senator Ford, we haven't heard from in this round.
Well, there are a number of gags on treatment that would fit the subject of treatment anyway. There's one of the two fellas talking. One says, "How's the world treating you?" The other fellow says, "Very seldom." Then there's a time that Pete reminded me of this with a joke he told. Dopey Dildock went to the doctor to find out what was the matter with him, and the doctor said, do you suffer from rheumatism? And Dopey said, sure, what else can you do with it? That's another kind of treatment. Then there's, then there's a time, mother said to her son, she said, you're treating your aunt very much better than you used to. I saw you open the barn door for her today. And the kid said, that's nothing. I open the barn door for the cows every day, don't I?
Well, Senator, we have a choice now of 100, 300, and
500. No, there's no choice. Which one was the highest?
Well, that isn't my choice. I like the middle one better, and I've got 300. Which doesn't top Mr.
Oh,
Barron's
you're beginning to pick out what you like now, huh?
Somebody
I'm going to have trouble with you again tonight.
We'll be right back with our next round of jokes after these few commercial words.
Back to the business of jokes once again. This one sent in by Kay Henderson of Larchmont, New York, and it's on the subject of storms. Storms.
We just had one a little while ago.
We'll probably have another one before we get off the air. Peter, suppose you rained out on this one.
Well, Sadie DeKalb, the green paint glamour girl, she went and got herself a job as a cook in a very swanky Westchester house. And she wasn't very good at this cooking. She wasn't very bright either. The first evening she was there, the mistress, Mrs. Geltbelt there, she says, Sadie, my dear, come here. What on earth did you stuff this chicken with?
She says, well, gee whiz, I didn't have to stuff it. It wasn't empty, you know.
Anyway, she wasn't a very bright kid, so this particular night, they had a terrific thunderstorm, and the lightning is flashing, and the thunder is booming away, and all of a sudden, short circuit, all the lights in the house go out. So in a couple of minutes, Sadie comes running into Mrs. Geltbelt from the kitchen.
She says, well, this is very perturbing, Mrs. Geltbelt. I don't like this at all. I'm very, very upset. I really am.
Well, Sadie, what do you mean? What's the matter?
She says, well, gee, how can I cook dinner with all the lights out like this? And I'm trying to make crepe Suzette's and everything nice tonight. And the lights are down. I can't see what I'm doing. Why don't you pay his bills once in a while?
So the mistress said, she said, please, Sadie, you don't understand. She said, the lights are out because of the storm.
She says, oh, yeah? Well, I notice they're only out in this house. All the automobiles out on the street are still lit.
600, 800, 1,000 on the laugh meter, Ward.
Miss Henderson automatically has $25. You boys are just out for the laughs and the soap. And I notice Harry Hirschfield has his hand up first.
Again, I want to toss one in first. It's kind of a little newy, I think. And a tremendous sleet storm. And oh, it's sleeting, it's slushing, it's cold, and it's blizzardy. A panhandler rings the doorbell of a place. And the door opens and the sleet and everything hits the guy in the face. Says, what do you want? Panhandler says, I would like something to eat. Believe me, I've seen better days. The guy says, so have I, but did you come here to discuss the weather or to come to eat here? But that is not the gag. But there's a fella came and borrowed some stuff from Finnegan. He came on a call and he borrowed a safety razor and he borrowed a fountain pen and he borrowed a book and he borrowed some hairbrushes and he promised to bring them back and he didn't bring them back. So finally Finnegan got mad. And he took him to court. And the judge for the guy says, now what did you claim he took from you? What did he borrow and didn't pay back? Well, he says he came and he took hairbrushes. And he says he took a fountain pen. He borrowed that and he borrowed a book. And he borrowed a safety razor. And he never brought him back. He says, are you sure of that? Positive? He says, sure as I can be. Well, since you're so sure, and you know the date so sure, and the time, what was the weather that night? He says, I'm glad you remind me. He's got my umbrella also.
Much better than the preface, Harry.
That's 900 is the final score in the Laugh Meter War.
However, it doesn't top Miss Henderson's 1,000. And now we have the other two hands up. I think the senator was second in line.
Well, a visitor to a small town said to a farmer, is your village lighted by electricity? He said, only when it lightnings. A teacher said to a little Sonny Lightner, she said, when rain falls, does it rise again? He said, yes, in due time. Oh, I have a lot of storm gags.
Suppose we hear a couple, Senator.
Oh. You want him to have a brainstorm?
Everybody picks on me. I don't know why. Anyway, it was midnight, and it was raining cats and dogs. There were poodles all over. And maybe I ought to leave it right there. And this drunk sought cover in a doorway, and it happened to be a sporting goods store. And he looked up, and right over the doorway in the form of a sign was a fish with a hook in its mouth and a line attached. So he looked for a while, and he ran over and rang the doorbell to the tenant who lived upstairs. The fellow stuck his head out of the window and said, what do you want? He said, come on down. You got a bite. Make it snappy.
Okay, Senator. Dallas decided to go over and retrieve the one he threw away after that. Well, in order of their appearance, those three jokes got zero, 300, and 550 cents.
Oh, now, wait a minute. It couldn't be zero. Three people laughed. I heard them.
No, as a matter of fact, I think it backed up a little bit, but I was going to keep it even.
Oh, you're fine tonight.
Well, so far, nobody's topped Miss Henderson's 1,000, and Joe Laurie's the only one with a chance.
I thought the round was over.
I've got a short preface. A fella says, tells his friend, he says, I was giving a party. He says, I made out my invitations, and a terrific windstorm come up. So instead of mailing the invitations, he says, I just threw them in the air. He says, what happened? He says, I got a much better class of people at the party that night. What I want to tell is a terrific snowstorm up in Maine. Oh, a terrific snowstorm. And there's a salesman going up the road there, and his car can hardly move, and he sees a farmer on snowshoes with a big, long pole. And he sticks the pole down in the snow. And he takes it up. Sticks it down in the snow. Walks a little bit further. Puts it up. And the salesman says, how deep is it? He says, I don't know. He says, then why are you sticking the pole away in the snow for like that? He says, I'm looking for my barn.
Joe, that wavered between 900 and 950, but it doesn't count. Henderson's 1,000.
Say, Ward, are you the referee of this thing?
I think I'm supposed to be. I often
want... Well, tell my manager I took an awful beating in that round, will you?
Nobody laid a glove on you. Don't worry about a thing.
So far, he's counted over 10.
Yeah, that's perfectly all right. Here's our next...
Ward, yes. Maybe you better slip me one of those joke books. I could find something to do tonight.
I understand there's plenty of material in there, Senator. Maybe we should have opened one tonight. I don't know. Let's see what happens on the next round anyway. This is from Mrs. D. Cantor. I don't think she's related to Eddie. Of New Bedford, Massachusetts. And on the subject, I hope none of you three come in too close contact with police. Police this time. So, Peter, act like a copper with this one, will you?
Well, Paddy Mulvaney was on the police force, and he used to be out on active duty. He was out on the beat, but he had to retire from that kind of rough stuff. It got a little too tough for him. He used to ride in the sidecar of a motorcycle, and one day the floor of the thing fell out, and he had to run alongside for 4 miles. So they put him on the desk work, and he was sort of the desk sergeant there. Well, this one day, he's sitting there in all his glory, and a woman ran in, and she said, oh... Pardon me, sir, but are you a policeman?
He says, now, what do I look like? Arturo Toscanini or somebody? course I'm a policeman. Now, what is your dilemma? And we'll try to help you.
She said, well, she said, I lost the diamond ring, or else it was stolen, and I want it investigated right away.
He says, all right, now, you came to the right party. Now, don't worry, you go home, and we'll get some of our sleuths to investigate for you, and we'll find it for you.
So she goes home, and she takes off her coat to hang it up. And there, right on the dresser, is the diamond ring. She just dropped it there. So she immediately calls the police station, and he's on the other end.
He says, Mulvaney, the bloodhound speaking. What's your problem?
She says, Mr. Mulvaney, this is Mrs. Jones. You know, I reported that the loss of a diamond ring.
He says, yes, I remember that very well.
Well, she says, I just want to tell you, don't bother sending over a detective. I found the ring.
He says, you found it? You say you found it? He says, for the love of Mike, you can't do that. We just arrested the thief.
The laugh meter registered 800 for that one, Ward.
Our boys have a little leeway on this particular round of Mrs. Cantor, so let's see whose hands we have. Harry Hirschfield had his hand
up. There's a crazy story going around now, this screwball story. It could fit this. There's a nudist walking down the street. And as he's sauntering around the street, this nudist called a cop grabs a hold of it and says, oh, one of those kind of guys. I'm going to take you right to the station house. But he says, wait a minute, I put my coat over you. He says, no, I want to go just like I am to the station house. He says, the way you are to the station house? He says, yes. He says, I don't want people to think I was arrested for being a pickpocket.
$700 is the score in the laugh meter this time, Ward.
Which is just $100 under Mrs. Canner's $800, so she now has $15. And I think Senator had his hand up a second.
Yeah, well, now listen, I'm going to tell one. And if it doesn't go, blame it on Marshall P. Wilder, because he told it years ago. Maybe he told it better than I'll tell it, but that doesn't make any difference. There was a fire in a rubber factory, and there was an employee trapped on the seventh floor. There was no way of his getting down. He couldn't jump. The pavement was 70 feet below, and there were no fire nets in those days. So he got an idea. So he began wrapping rubber around himself to break his fall when he jumped. But he made the mistake of putting too much rubber on himself. When he jumped, he began to bounce. And he bounced and he bounced. He bounced for 5 days when a policeman had to shoot him to keep him from starving to death.
Well, thanks to Mr. Wilder, Senator, that one got 850, just 50 over Mrs. Canner's 800. So
maybe I should think of more people who told jokes.
Go back for a few more. Let's see, Joe, we haven't heard from you.
Yeah, there's a lot of policemen gang. I'll throw one in. This doesn't count. It's about the two kids bragging. One kid says, you know, my brother's a robber. He says, your brother's a robber? He says, yes, and he's going to rob your house. He says, yeah, he's going to rob our house. We'll have the house full of cops. He says, oh, he won't take them because we got too many cops now around our house. We don't know what to do. What I want to tell is sort of annoying to me. There's a car racing, and there's a cop goes after him, and he stops him. Pull over. He says, how fast were you going? He says, well, officer, I got to tell you the truth. 90 miles an hour. I'll tell you the truth. We went 90. He says, you went 90. He says, you know, the law allows you 30 miles an hour. He says, that's right. Yeah, that's right, boss. You're the boss. He says, you went 90, and the law allows you 30. Let me see. 30 into 90. Three times. Here's three tickets. So there was another cop that come along. And he says, now let me... I said, you give me three tickets. He says, let me see your driver's license. Your license. He says, drivers or owners? He says, what's the difference? I can't read them anyway. Then another cop shot around. Let me read the book with you tonight, Senator.
That wasn't one of Mr. Wilder's old monologues, was it, Joe?
Ward, have I got time to tell...
I'm not going to blame Wilder on this either.
For free? Can I have got time for free to tell the first policeman story I ever heard?
We'll have to make it quickly, yeah. Harry.
There's a policeman standing on a corner, and there's a burglar, a bandit, throws a brick through a jewelry window, takes all the jewelry out of the window and everything, and the cop is watching him. And finally, this bandit says to the policeman, tell that to your police captain.
He said, not me. I'm no gossip.
Well, Joe, taking into account your scores on that round, I like the 50 in the middle. That was a cute little thing.
More fun, more jokes, coming up in a minute after this word from our sponsor.
All right, boys, now for another round of jokes. This one's sent in by Mrs. Bess Finkel of Paterson, New Jersey, on the subject of gloom. So, Pete, here's
one
check.
You don't even have to tell a joke. Just look at the senator's face.
Say disaster, just gloom. Peter, here's your chance to be a gloom dodger at last.
Yes. Oh, that's the plug. This is about my old friend, Mr. Abercrombie Fafufnik. And he's walking down the street one day, and he's feeling very happy, and he's singing, "The weather outside is terrible. Who's a schmo, who's a schmo, who's a schmo?" You know, the needle be. And all of a sudden, he sees his old friend Goldberg. So he says, "Hello, Goldberg." He says, "Hello."
He says, "Buenas noches, besame mucho." He says, "What's cooking?"
So Goldberg is very sad looking. He says, "Oy, I'm dying to pieces." Oh, he says, "Abe," he says, "what happened to me shouldn't happen to me."
He says, "So what happened? You're looking so dismal and abysmal. Tell me what happened."
He says, "You don't know. Last night I went to the movies." He says, "I saw a wonderful picture. Who hit Susie Slagle with a bagel?" He says, "I'm sitting there. I'm enjoying the picture." He says, "When the lights go on," he says, "right next to me was a beautiful, gorgeous blonde. And I had to be at the movies with my wife."
He says, "You call that trouble?" He says, "That's a difficulty." He says, "Don't think a thing about it." He says, "Let me tell you what happened to me." He says, "Last night I was at the movies with a beautiful, gorgeous blonde. And when the lights went up, sitting next to me was my wife."
$1,000 on the Laugh Meter Award.
It automatically gives Mrs. Finkel $25 and puts you boys out just for laughs. And we only have a very few seconds. Let's see all the hands and see who I can get for just one quick joke. Harry Hirschfield, let me say.
Well, there's one that's running around quick. Is Mrs. Van Cleve Van Eppes gives a very swell party. Oh, terrific. The next day, she's very, very sad walking down the street. The neighbor said, "What are you so sad for? I hear you gave a wonderful party." She said, "It was spoiled by one woman. She's the only one that came to my place in a cloth coat."
That's a gloomy gag.
Well, we can sneak a couple more like that in. I think we better, too.
I had to be the guy to put the hand up.
Well, let's see how Joe Lurie does it.
I think I've got a real fast one. You want a real short one?
Yeah, real short.
Montgomery Epstein is in the sitting room there, and he's looking very bad. She says, "What's the matter, Montgomery?" She says, "I feel so terrible, I could die right here." She says, "You can't die here." She says, "Why can't I die here?" She said, "Because this is the living room."
Well, it's smart 600, Joe, but so far, Tempest has fidgeted. So as long as Mrs. Finkel had 1,000 anyway.
Aren't they lucky? I don't have to get them around.
Well, join us again next week, friends. Same time, same gangs. Other jokes, some new, some old. Until then, we'll remain yours for bigger and better laughs.
Senator Ford.
Harry Hirschfield.
Joe Lurie Jr.
Peter Donald.
Ward Wilson.
And this is your host, Roger Bauer, saying so long. And take care of yourself until we meet again next time.